Great Pharaoh is in his city of 1,000 red gates. In the morning he goes to the great pillared temple of mighty Amon-Ra. Great Pharaoh prays the sun, his father, into the sky. He prays the light into the world. The wide green Nile flows through the two lands, upper and lower, red and white, vulture and cobra, Ankh and flail. The entire world sails upon the river that flows down the middle. Great Pharaoh sends ships down the river and into the seas that wash the world beyond the two lands. The washed world sends back tribute and trade from across the seas. Serpent-eyed Amathanta coils restless in her sea. She pushes the tides and the waves with her movement. Her scales are blue and green, and they glitter gold in the sun's light. Mighty Ra sails his golden ship of 1,000,000 years across the fierce blue sky. In the morning he is born from Sky Arching Li, whose dark skin glitters with stars. He sails his golden ship and lights the world. He sails his ship, and in the evening he grows old and dies. He slips past Sky Arching Li and into the world of the dead. Everything is in its place. Everything is as it should be. It is good. Niko is at sea. He is sailing home. The little boat, the heron, bobs in the dancing blue water as the men row. Each morning Niko and the other men sail out to catch wind and waves and fish. The fresh wind in Niko's face is the sweetest of perfumes. The blue water, white with foam, Ra's light shining down on Niko's lapis lazuli, his ivory, his gold. Then each afternoon he sails home to his treasure. Everything is in its place. Everything is as it should be. It is good. The drummer beats his drum. The men pull the wide oars, the lapping, sparkling water to that beat. The old wooden oar is smooth beneath Niko's hands. The air is full of sea and salt and sweat. Today the heron's hold is full of fish. Into the harbor of Kosir, past the white breakwater, the drummer beats his drum and the men pull the oars. They jump from the boat to the white stone dock, throwing ropes and laughing. Laughing, they carry the shift fish to be sold at market. The catch has been good. Great Pharaoh is in his city of 1,000 red gates. In the morning, he goes to the great pillared temple of mighty Amon-Ra. Great Pharaoh prays the sun, his father, into the sky. He prays the light into the world. The wide green Nile flows through the two lands. Upper and lower, red and white, vulture and cobra, Ankh and flail. The entire world sails upon the river that flows down the middle. Great Pharaoh sends ships down the river and into the seas that wash the world beyond the two lands. The washed world sends back tribute and trade across the seas. Serpent-eyed Amathanta coils restless in her sea. She pushes the tides and the waves with her movement. Her scales are blue and green, and they glitter gold in the sun's light. Mighty Ra sails his golden ship of 1,000,000 years across the fierce blue sky. In the morning he is born from Sky Arching Li, whose dark skin glitters with stars. He sails his golden ship and lights the world. He sails his ship, and in the evening he grows old and dies. He slips past Sky Arching Li and into the world of the dead. Everything is in its place. Everything is as it should be. It is good. Niko is at sea. He is sailing home. The little boat, the heron, bobs in the dancing blue water as the men row. Each morning, Niko and the other men sail out to catch wind and waves and fish. The fresh wind in Niko's face is the sweetest of perfumes. The blue water, white with foam, Ra's light shining down on Niko's lapis lazuli, his ivory, his gold. Then each afternoon he sails home to his treasure. Everything is in its place. Everything is as it should be. It is good. The drummer beats his drum. The men pull the wide oars, the lapping, sparkling water to that beat. The old wooden oar is smooth beneath Niko's hands. The air is full of sea and salt and sweat. Today the heron's hold is full of fish. Into the harbor of Kosir, past the white breakwater, the drummer beats his drum and the men pull the oars. They jump from the boat to the white stone dock, throwing ropes and laughing. Laughing, they carry the fish to be sold at market. The catch has been good. Nika goes to the busy market by the white stone docks and buys some grain meal. He goes to the tomb of his ancestors. He lights a fire and makes an offering of fish and grain to his mother and his father, to those who have come before. Nico prays. He walks fast on the red clay street to his red clay house, and he is home. He puts down his part of the day's catch. Nico calls out to his treasure. Little Seppu, fat and naked, runs to the door and gurgles. Nico picks up Seppu and holds him high. Little Seppu waves his fat little arms and smiles. He has one tooth. His youth lock is just a wisp of hair. Little Kirti is tugging at Nico's linen kilt. She wants Papa to help her fly. So after a hug and a kiss for Seppu, he picks up Kirti. She's almost too big for this. In another year, she will be too heavy. Nico holds her up as long as he can, but it has been a long day at sea. Soon, he must put her down. They walk to the house to the back. He carries little Seppu on his shoulders. Seppu beats at Neko's head like a drum. Nico holds Kirti's hand in his as they walk. He asks Kirti if she's been good, if she's helped her mama watch Seppu. She chatters about her day. She brewed beer with mama. Seppu said goo. She needs dough that mama is making into black bread. They step into the red clay courtyard behind the house. It is shaded by a red brick wall, but it is still hot and bright. There is fresh bread on the stone. He smiles at his Mara, who is cutting onions for stew. She smiles at her Neku. Everything is in its place. Everything as it should be. It is good. For now. Tomorrow, Neku will sail away. The Lord of the Door to the South has decreed that a ship will sail to Pharaoh's gold mines with 150 men with stout hearts. The great Horus in flight, a mighty ship 150 cubits long and 40 cubits wide, will sail south. Then Helitat, the men will go down into the earth to mine gold beneath the yellow cliffs. Go down until the great Horus in flight's hold is full of gold. The men will go down away from mighty Ra in his heaven and restless Amalthalta in her sea, down into the earth away from Mara with her stew and Kirti as she grows too old to fly. And Seppu, as he says his first word, that is not goo. A year. Forever. Away. Tomorrow. Tonight, Neku is in his clay house holding his Mara. Mara is on her reed mat holding her Neku. Close. Closer. Great Pharaoh is in his city of 1,000 great temples. The great Pharaoh of Upper and Lower Egypt, Mekhtar. Son of Ra, Khenmet-Amen, is far away. The wide, muddy Nile flows through the middle of the world, but the Nile is far away. Serpentine Amalthalta is in her sea. Her daughters are restless. Mighty Ra is in his heavens. Each night, bright burning Ra fights the dire serpent Apep in the underworld. Mighty Ra fights so he can be reborn from sky-arching Lee, be reborn to light the new day. It is tomorrow. Neku is sailing away. The drummer beats his drum, and the sailors, the best who have seen heaven and earth, pull the oars. The captain had said the wind would not be contrary, or that there would be none, and indeed there is none. It is calm as the sailors pull their wide oars through the green waters, past the white rocks where the daughters of restless Amalthalta sit, combing their hair. Neku glances at them. They are ugly, strange. Their heads are not shaved. They have long green hair tangled with shells. Their skin is not brown. They have white skin which shimmers like the underbelly of a shark. Their pale hips blend into fish tails that glitter in the sea spray. They call to the sailors by name. One of the women slides into the water and swims alongside the ship, just out of reach of the oars. She smiles at Neku. Her eyes are yellow and slit like a cat's. They bulge slightly like a frog's. She reaches out pale white arms to Neku. She calls to him. She whispers that there is a cool white palace of pearl beneath the green sunlit waves waiting for him. That she longs for Neku in her red coral bed. That it will be dark beneath the stone. Don't go. Don't leave her. Slip into the water so that she can hold him in her arms. Come into the water so that she can cover his face in kisses. She has so many things to show him, so many things to tell him. One of the sailors jumps into the water. In a tail-flip flash, the woman has the sailor in her thin white arms, is pressing small white teeth to his sun-weathered face and neck. He is smiling as she pulls him under the waves. The sailor does not resist as the woman's sisters swarm into the water, churning the waves to a white froth with their tails that glitter in Ra's light. Neku shivers at his oar in the warm morning sun. The ship has paid servant-eyed Amalfalka a willing due. The wind begins to blow from the north. Neku feels the smooth wood of the deck beneath his bare feet as he runs to raise the sail. He is alive. The green cotton sail catches the wind, bells out forward, and the ship dances away from the white rocks where the daughters of restless Amalfalka like to sit combing their long hair. The days pass. Neku counts them. 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2. One day left. Tomorrow. They will reach the yellow cliffs, or the sailors will go down to the dark earth to mine great Pharaoh's gold. Mighty Pharaoh is in his city of wide, smooth roads, but Neku is on the ship. The great horse in flight is sailing fast before the wind and the waves. The wind is in Neku's face. Ra's warm gaze is on his back. They had said that the wind would not be contrary, or that there would be none. As the ship approaches the port of Helikat, as the yellow cliffs come into view, the wind rises and throws up waves 8 cubits high. For the first time in Neku's life, in anyone's life, the hot blue sky turns dark, fierce. Black clouds dare to hide mighty Ra's light, and icy water drenches down from the angry sky. Black waves toss the ship. Jagged lightning fingers slash the clouds. The sailors struggle to guide the great horse in flight. The waves grow higher. The shrieking, weeping wind slams the ship. The great mast cracks like a twig and falls away. It smashes 5 sailors as it tumbles into the sea. Neku grabs hold of a wooden plank as a wave casually plucks him up and into the sea. Swept down into a deep valley of water, carried up to the top of a wave 20 cubits high, Neku can barely see the sailors scrambling as the ship snaps in two. When Neku reaches the top of the next wave, the ship is gone. Neku is alone in the wet black sea, clinging to a bit of wood. Neku thinks he sees mighty serpents flying on the howling winds, playing tag with the lightning. Neku thinks he sees the maiden, Amalfalka's daughter, reaching out to him with her white arms. Neku thinks he sees a giant serpent's head just beneath a black and silver wave, its giant yellow eye staring at him as he floats helplessly. Neku makes himself think of Mara and Kirti and Seppu and holds on. Hours, days, it could be forever. Neku hears the sound of waves crashing on the shore. He kicks his bare feet in the cold water. He can barely feel them. He is so tired. He doesn't dare let go of his piece of wood, waterlogged in his cold arms, holds on and closes his eyes and kicks in the direction of the roar. He tumbles onto the sandy shore. He crawls up the powder-fine beach. Above, there is the arch of curving Nui's night sky skin and her glittering stars. Gentle Hathor's full round moon shines pale blue on the beach in waves. Neku looks out at the sea. He can see lightning and clouds. He closes his eyes and sees no more. In the morning, Neku wakes to see mighty Ra high overhead. Neku looks out at the sea. He looks at the place where the black clouds roil, where lightning stabs clouds, where rain and fierce wind laments some almost heard name, a storm 10 cubits out from shore, and clear sunlit skies. A white flake floats free of the storm. Neku catches it. It is cold and turns to water in his hand. Neku's mouth is dry with salt. Neku's eyes are red with waves. Neku prays to serpent-eyed Amalfalka and thanks for sparing him. He prays to sweet Kebeshet for water, but great Amalfalka's mercy might not be in vain. He prays for the sailors who sank beneath the waves, men whose ba's and ka's may never be reunited. He prays to Amalfalka to send them to the great Osiris. He prays that restless Amalfalka will pity them and guide them to the land of the dead, take them to where their ba's and ka's can become one, where they will become light, be reborn as Ah in the land of the dead. Then he walks north along the shore. He must find water and food soon. He walks until he comes to a small, cold stream that bubbles the sea. He falls to his knees and drinks the cool, clean water. He drinks life in gulps. A white fig tree grows next to the stream. Its limbs are heavy with plump, purple fruit. He gobbles them up, tiny seeds catching in his teeth, juice running down his chin. He eats. 10 cubits from shore, the storm still rages, lightning slashes, black waves toss beneath black clouds. Rain and wind wail. Neku looks away from the storm. He takes off his linen kilt. He gathers up figs in its folds. He walks down the shore. He passes cold streams. He passes fat orange melons, growing ripe on green vines. He passes waving fat golden grain. He walks by splendid birds with blue and green and red feathers. He walks until he comes to the little bit of wood that saved his life. Neku knows that he is on an island in the eye of a storm, 10 cubits out from where the waves meet the shore. Neku sits on the hot white sand. He listens to the howling wind. He looks at the slashing, falling water and the moving, unmoving clouds. Neku weeps. Then he walks back to the first stream. If he is to see his family again, he must stay alive. Next to the cool stream, he lies down in a dark thicket, and the shadow covers him. For 3 days he is alone without a companion beside his own heart. He hears it beating in his chest. He hears the sound of the sea. He makes a stone axe. He cuts down palm trees and lashes them together with seaweed. He sits on the sand and stares at the storm. It is black with clouds. It is silver with falling water where mighty raw's light hits the storm's edge. He stares and stares and sees a woman walking from the storm. She wears a long woven skirt of many colors. It is ripped. She is walking on the water. Her breasts are bare and bleed from where she scratches at them. She is weeping. Her black, curling hair appears to have once been gathered high in her head in the manner of the Knossos. Now it is wild and streaked with ash. She walks over the waves. She walks on the shore. Neku bows to the woman and says, "Great lady, what distresses you so?" The woman looks at him, her shore green eyes. "My daughter, my Kore, I am looking for my daughter. Have you seen my little girl?" Neku looks up at the woman. "Great lady, whose grief so reflects my own, I wish I could give you news to gladden your heart, but I have seen no maiden since I was cast ashore upon a wave of the sea. When was she taken? What does your daughter, your Kore, look like?" The woman's hands scratch at her arms. "She is my golden-haired Kore." The woman's hands pull at her hair. "She is my blue-eyed daughter." Her fingers tear at her face. "She is my pale, sweet little one. She is my springtime dove." She weeps. The storm weeps back. Neku sighs. "Great lady, my heart weighs heavy against the truth that I must tell. I have seen no little girl with golden hair or blue eyes or pale skin like a dove before or after I was cast into the sea." Neku looks for something to offer this little woman who walks over water. "But, great lady, pray do not grieve so. I am but a poor shipwrecked sailor, far from my family, but there is cool water to clean your cuts and ease your thirst. There is fruit to ease your hunger. There are trees to shelter you, great lady. May it please you to rest a moment, that your search might go easier." But the woman does not hear him. She turns and walks back out into the storm. Neku watches her. Watches as her shape slips over waves and through falling water. Watches as she disappears from view. Neku considers a moment, his face thoughtful. Neku stops working on his raft. He makes a little throwing club for catching birds. Neku makes a little spear to catch fish in the stream. Neku gathers figs and melons and grain. He digs a pit and lights a fire. Puts birds and fish and figs and melons and grain into the fire. And makes burnt offerings to the gods. He prays that the great pharaoh may long rule in his city of electrum and temples. He prays that the serpent-eyed Amathalta will cause the reed sea to calm, that mighty Ra will sail across fierce blue skies, unmarred by clouds, that fierce Horus will seek out the lost Kore with his immortal eye, that the world will be as it has always been, everything good and in its place. As he prays, mighty Ra travels across the blue sky from east to west. His ship slips from view behind black clouds, and the sky turns pink and orange and gold. Suddenly, Nico hears a noise as of thunder, not out of the sea, in the howling winds, not in the crashing waves. The trees shake, the earth shudders, branches fall. Nico falls to the ground and covers his face. When the noise stops, he looks up. A great serpent towers over him. It is 30 cubits long, and its beard is more than 2 cubits in soft floating length. Its body is as a statue overlaid with gold, and its color is that of true lazuli. The serpent coils itself before Nico, who hurriedly bows down as if before a great prince. The serpent, in a voice like sweet metal striking metal, says, "What has brought you? What has brought you, little one? What has brought you? If you say not speedily what has brought you to this isle, I will make you know yourself. As a flame you will vanish if you do not tell me something I have not heard, of which I knew not before you spoke." But before Nico can raise his head or say a word, the serpent takes Nico in his mouth and carries him to a cool, shady spot beside a white, lotus-filled pool. Careful as a cat with her kitten, the serpent lays Nico down on the green grass without a scratch. Nico checks his arms and legs, but they are whole and sound, and nothing is missing. Then the serpent says, "What has brought you? What has brought you, little one? What has brought you to this isle which is in the sea, and of which the shores are in the midst of the waves?" Nico bows face down into the grass and replies, "I was sailing to the mines by the order of great Pharaoh, in the Horus in flight. A ship 150 cubits of its length, and the width of it was 40 cubits. It had 150 sailors of the best of Egypt who had seen heaven and earth, and the hearts of whom were stronger than lions. They said that the wind would not be contrary, or that there would be none. A storm came upon us while we were at the sea. Hardly could we reach the shore when the wind came yet greater. As for me, I seized a piece of wood, while those who were in the boat perished, without being one left with me for 3 days. Behold me now before you, for I was brought to this island by a wave of the sea." The serpent said, fear not, little one, and make not your face sad. If you have come to me, it is the gods who have let you live." And at this great serpent slowly winks one great yellow eye. "For surely it is they who have brought you to this island of blessed souls, where nothing is lacking and which is filled with good things." The great serpent coils on itself and rests its great head upon the grass. "Converse is pleasing, and he who tastes of it passes over his misery. As for you, if you are strong, and if your heart waits patiently, then you shall return to your house, which is full of good things, and you shall see your land, where you shall dwell in the midst of your kindred." Nico bows in obeisance, touches the ground before the serpent. "When that comes to pass, I shall tell to all who listen, I shall make known of your greatness, and I will return and bring to you sacred oils and perfumes and incense of the temple with which all gods are honored." The great serpent smiles in its long beard and says, "I know that you are a poor sailor. You are not rich in perfumes. As for me, I am a great prince of the land of Punt, reborn as a serpent, as you see. When you depart from this place, I will give you gifts that will turn your great Pharaoh sweet on you. When you shall depart from this place, you shall never more see this isle. It shall be changed into waves. Now then, let us speak of our homes that are far away." The serpent tells Nico of its 75 children who once dwelt with it in the far-off land of Punt, of houses on stilts and fat queens and plump baboons. Nico speaks of Mara brewing bitter beer, sweet with broom and bitter with hops. He speaks of Kirti leaping from rocks to fly. He speaks of Sepu with his tooth and his youth's lock. The serpent tells Nico the story of Cyrus, the child magician who journeyed with his father to the land of the dead. Nico tells the serpent the tale of the wise judge and the donkey. Stars wink on dark Nui's skin as she arches over her husband, cackling Geb, the earth. Gentle Hathor's moon sets into the trees. Neku, curling into a nest of the serpent's long beard, sleeps. In the morning, mighty Ra is reborn, and the man and the serpent sit and converse by the lotus pool. The days go by. Weeks. Months.
and in the third month the wind stops. The black cloudy sky clears in its expression and smiles. Mighty Ra and his ship sails over clear green waters lapping in his light. And in the fourth month, the dark curve of a ship slips into view. Niku calls out to the men on the ship. The men call back and wave. It is the heron. He turns to the great serpent, but it is gone. In the hollow where it coiled, there are chests of ebony. The chests are full of incense and perfume. They are full of lazuli and ivory and gold. Niku laughs, and the men on the heron swim to shore. He tells them of the great Horus in flight, of the island of the weeping woman, of the serpent with its gifts. They tell him how they came to sail to the island. They had been fishing when the black clouds gathered. They had been gathering their nets when the black waves rose. They could only cling to the heron and let the wind carry them. As they despaired, a mighty serpent of the sea took hold of the heron in its mouth. A great serpent took hold of them, but far from devouring the heron, it carried the boat to a sheltered cove lined with caves. These 3 months they sheltered in the rock, sheltered in the kind, dark earth, as balls of solid water, the size of a man's head, fell from the sky. As the wind knocked trees and rocks like chaff, they sheltered until the sky smiled again. Set sail to where the wind would take them. The wind has brought them here. They fill the heron's hold with Niku's treasure and sail away from the island. Niku glances back, but the island is not there. There are only waves. But it seems that from beneath that blue wave, a yellow eye winks and then slips from view. The wind is good. It blows in the direction that the men need to go. They sail west. They follow Mighty Ra as he sails across the sky. Great Pharaoh Kenmet Anan is in his tomb. The offering fires are lit. Everything is in its place. The year count is reset to year one. Debts are forgiven. Prisoners are released. Everything is as it should be. Great Pharaoh of Upper and Lower Egypt, Kepsah, son of Ra, Sankanat, is in his city of 1,000 gates. The brown Nile rises to spread wealth. Serpent-eyed Amathalta sleeps in her seas. Mighty Ra sails his golden ship past white clouds which dot the vast blue sky. It is good. Niku is at sea. He is sailing home. Into the harbor of Kosir, past the white breakwater, the drummer beats his drum and the men sing as the wind carries them home. They jump from the heron to the white stone dock, throwing ropes and laughing. Laughing, they carry Niku's treasure to shore. Their families are gathered. Mara and Kirti and Sepu stand on the white stone dock. There are hugs, and it seems that Kirti is not too big to fly. The end.